This is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast, Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which you can find on the blog, Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com. And it's also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, as always, I get the amazing opportunity to speak with yet another woman who's going to share parts of her story. So I'd just like to say, hey, Lucy, how are you today? Thanks for being a guest.
I'm doing very well, Pam, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So to get us started, can you introduce yourself, who you are, where you're from, what keeps you busy?
Yeah, well, my name is Lucy Reed Ward. I've been involved in the stuttering community for a long, long time, since 1998, and people have known me as Lucy Reed for much of that time. I just got married again 2 years ago, and that's when I added the Ward onto it. So I'm a speech pathologist who stutters, and I worked in a school for 17 years. I retired, and I lived all of my life in southern New Jersey outside of Philadelphia. When I retired, I moved to Alabama. I now live in coastal Alabama. And when I retired, I began doing speech therapy with kids over my computer doing teletherapy. And so it keeps me very, very, very busy, but the exciting part is that when I was in the school, I didn't get to treat very many kids who stuttered, and now that I'm doing teletherapy, I'm getting to do more. My dream was always to pursue the ASHA board certification in fluency, which you need to accrue a lot of hours over a certain time period. Where was I going to get the people to do it with? So now that there's such a thing as telepractice, it's possible to do it. So now I'm doing it. So that is so, so exciting.
Yeah. But you know, what's funny, or what struck me, is that you said that you retired and then you're still providing therapy, you know, virtually. So you didn't really retire, right?
So I've retired from that school job. And what I'm doing now, it's like, my career I just turned 66 years old, the age where most people retire. And
yeah,
but you know what? I feel like my career has just begun. I feel like what I became a speech pathologist to do 22 years ago, I'm starting to do it now. So I'm actually getting a private practice going. It should be up and running by the summer. I want to work with people who stutter primarily, and especially kids and adults too. And kids, teens, all ages, preschool through adults. And that's what I became, that's what I, you know, wanted to do. I was told really, really early on by a very prominent speech pathologist who lived in a big city, it's not possible to make a living doing stuttering therapy because the population isn't there. But now with teletherapy, I can see people from all over and really, really make a difference. I'm so excited. So
So what drew you into the field initially? Why did you want to become a speech therapist?
Well, okay, so right out of high school, okay, I had, you know, like many, many people, I was filled with shame and fear about my stuttering. My speech was really disfluent. I was like many, I was a covert stutterer. Mm-hmm. I was able, at times I was able to hide it, at times I wasn't. So when I could hide it, I was, and I was filled with shame and fear about it. And so coming out of high school, I thought, you know, I can't be a secretary because I stutter. I can't be a teacher because I stutter. I can't do this and that. And so I went into this animal science technology program. It was a 2-year college program. I didn't want to go away to college because I was afraid because I stuttered. So it trained you to either work in a vet's office or to go into research science. And so, of course, I told myself, I can't work in a vet's office because I stutter. I can't answer phones. I can't work with the public. So I went into the research side of it. So I worked in medical research labs from 1974, when I graduated, until 1999.
Okay, well, that's still a good chunk of time.
Yeah, I worked in medical research all of that time. And during that time, I got my a bachelor's degree, working full-time, raising 3 kids. So, so my oldest boy stuttered. And so he was very mild. He was probably covert. His teachers never heard him stutter. Mm. And when he was around 10, he barely stuttered. Mm. What we didn't know was that he was building up all this anxiety. Mm. We didn't know that. His teachers never heard him stutter. Mm-hmm. My family, like my brothers, Kyle doesn't stutter. We never hear him stutter. Like, most people didn't even know about it. So anyway, he told us he never wanted therapy. When he was around 10, he told us that he wanted therapy. So we both began therapy at the same time. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. So we went to this therapist who taught us both fluency shaping. And so in the office, I was like completely fluent. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, how cool is this? Mm-hmm. In my lab job, you know, I enjoyed the satisfaction I got from it. It was sort of like a craft, sort of. Mm-hmm. And I got satisfaction from it, but I didn't get recognition. I wasn't personally satisfied. And at that time, at the same time, I was finishing it. It was a degree in social science, where I took a lot of history, psychology, sociology courses, women's studies. So I wanted to go on. I was thinking of maybe becoming a psychologist or a social worker. Even though I stuttered, I was thinking of along these lines. And so when I did this fluency shaping in the speech therapist's office, I thought, how cool. I could get a job doing this, because I couldn't use it outside of her office. I still stuttered outside of the office, but I could do it in the office. And I thought, if I could get a job as a speech therapist where I could talk like this all, because it felt so good, where I could talk like this all day, how cool would that be?
Mm-hmm.
So I applied. I was living in South Jersey, working in Philadelphia, where Temple University is. And so I applied to Temple University. I got in, and that's where I did my my master's degree in speech pathology. I graduated in the year 2000, and so I became a speech pathologist, not for only that reason, but because, you know, I wanted to help my son. I wanted answers for myself. I wanted to know all the secrets that speech pathologists knew about stuttering.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. let me ask you a question. You said that, you know, you were just like, you were marveled with the fact that you could be so fluent in the therapist office. And like, you were like, yeah, that's something that I want to do. But you also mentioned that you couldn't maintain your fluency outside of the therapist's office. So weren't you worried, like, going into the field that you might work with clients who may also feel, oh, wow, I can be fluent in the therapy room, but nothing works when I go outside. So did you think about that?
I wasn't really thinking that far ahead, no. I was just thinking that I would find out what speech pathologists knew about stuttering, and that I would learn how to help people.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Did you find that magic bullet answer from other speech pathologists?
Well, I found it more from stuttering support. You know, I was, like I said, filled with shame, guilt, and fear. And when I started the program at Temple, I was still filled with shame and fear. And it wasn't until my second year that I was in it that, the professor there who taught the speech, the stuttering course work and the stuttering clinic was the very famous Woody Starkweather.
Oh yes, I've heard of him, never met him, but heard of him.
So blessed. And so you know, and he and at the same time I had become friends online with Peter Reitzes.
Hmm.
And there was a stuttering called a listserv called Stut L.
Mm-hmm.
So today, what is similar to it, we have all of these Facebook stuttering groups where people share and chat and talk. Well, that's what this was like. So through Peter and through Woody, I heard about the National Stuttering Project.
Okay.
And I started getting their publication, Letting Go. And the first one came and big, bold writing, "It's okay to stutter."
Hmm.
And I thought, wow. Because I had spent my entire life trying not to stutter, because I thought that's what I was supposed to do. I, you know, and I had just gone to the Hollins Institute, which is a 3-week intensive fluency shaping program.
Mm-hmm.
Where when I was there, my speech was absolutely perfect. I came home, I couldn't talk. Okay, I was just blocked. So I went to my first NSP, the National Stuttering Project is now the National Stuttering Association. And my first convention was in Atlanta in 1997, where I met the man that I am now married to. In 1997, No. I'm sorry. 1998. And we got married 2 years ago in 2018. So we got married 20 years after we had met. So anyway, so I went to that first convention and my life changed.
How so?
Well, by meeting other people who stutter, by, you know, just seeing them in real life situations stuttering, you just gain confidence. And at the same time, on the stud out, sharing your story in a public forum is so healing because you're being validated. And there's something about, I don't know if I'm saying her name right. I've been reading her books, Brené Brown.
Oh, yes. Yes.
She writes a lot about shame. And one of her quotes, and it just struck me. I can't even remember it now, but it's something like shame once spoken, like loses its power. So once you speak your shame, the power is gone.
Right, right.
So sharing your stories in the public forum, you speak your shame and it is gone. So between going to that first conference, meeting people, finding out that it's okay to stutter, there were hundreds of people there telling me that, giving me the confidence and giving me the knowledge that it was okay with them. I met so many people there that when I went home, like it felt like they were with me. They were walking with me. I'm gonna tell you who the people I remember were walking with me. Annie Bradbury was walking with me when I went home. Michael Sugarman was walking with me when I went home. Bonnie Weiss. Did you ever meet her?
Yes, yes. I think at three or four conferences, and she actually lived up in just north of me in New York. Yeah.
Well, I walked into my first timers workshop. Now, I was brand new to the stuttering community, filled with shame. Okay. There she is on stage talking to a room full of people, a huge audience, and she's stuttering.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how is someone who stutters allowed to speak to a room of people? It blew me away. Like, I thought it was the most awesome thing in the world. Like, how is this permitted? Like, it just blew me away. So this transforms you. And so also I went into therapy with Woody Starkweather. So he began working with me on in stuttering modification, which is the other school of the other approach. Fluency right. Shaping teaches you how to speak without stuttering. And for someone like me who had all this fear, it just increases your fear. Because the reason I went home and couldn't talk and blocking is because I was afraid to talk. So stuttering modification teaches you how to stutter easily. Well, the first thing he had to do was teach me how to stutter. I was so avoidant and so covert that, Pam, I wouldn't even let myself stutter. My speech pattern was ridiculous. I made no sense. I would say, you know, 15 words. Times. Yes. There are people who There's one guy in the NSA that everybody knows who's a big comedian who still teases me about it. I would say, I don't know. I would say I forgot. I mean, you know, someone asks you your name and you can't say it. And they say, would you forget your name? It was like that. Someone would ask me where I live. You say, well, it's that town that's, you know, south of a certain town, but in that county, and until they say, oh, do you mean Williamstown? Yeah, that's it. You, I don't know if you've ever been through this, but, you know, you will do anything not to stutter. I mean, I've made no sense whatsoever. I was so avoided. I would not stutter. So the first thing Woody had to do is teach me how to stutter. Mm-hmm. Before he could teach me how to stutter easily. And the thing I remember doing that helped me the most was pull out. So when I felt that moment coming, he taught me how to relax the tension and let the word out. Mm-hmm. And so I recently did an interview with Simon Bailey.
I know the name, but I don't know him.
Yeah. He's a man from Britain who was a coach in the Maguire program. And so in watching myself, I was horrified because I saw myself managing my stuttering in a way that a lot of people would applaud it. They would say, oh, she's managing. Mm-hmm. But to me, it looked like I was hiding it. Mm-hmm. And I did not like that because to me, it was saying, I'm hiding the fact that I'm stuttering. And to me, it's saying, I'm ashamed of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not ashamed of it.
Right.
I'm proud that I stutter. So I need a speech tune-up. And I'm a speech therapist, so I know what to do. So I've been practicing pull-outs and even doing voluntary ones. I'm trying to make myself be aware. Mm-hmm. Of those moments, and instead of trying to manage them by not stuttering, by keeping myself from stuttering on them, mm-hmm. I'm trying to purposely stutter easily on them, not stutter easily, but kind of slide out of them. So
mm-hmm. So I want to go back just a minute or two ago. You mentioned the Stut-L list. That was also my first foray into anything stuttering. I remember Ed Feuer. I don't know if you remember that name, but he was so controversial and so Bernie was on the list and Bonnie Weiss was on the list, but this Ed guy was like, he was just like so like critical and so negative that I began to only read things and not comment. Mm. But it's funny though, because this young kid from Ireland named Richard, 19 years old, he was on that list his first time, and we struck a chord with each other. And that was 11 years ago, and I still maintain contact with him. But only via email, because he believes that his severe stuttering is too much of a burden to impose on another person. So he definitely has some work to do, but I always just marveled at the fact, like, gee, I met this kid and we were emailing back and forth, and now it's been 11 years, you know, and it's you know, it's really, it's just something special. And I was going to go visit him a couple years ago. But it didn't work out. And I think part of the reason why it didn't work out was that he chickened out, you know, because sometimes, as I'm sure you know, when you've been covert or you've been hiding, or just not speaking, when you first meet another person who stutters, that can be so intimidating, right? Because it's like looking in a mirror. Mm-hmm. And we hold ourselves up to, you know, like, do I sound like that? And oh my gosh. And, you know, so like, I think that's what he was afraid of. Mm-hmm. Meeting another person who stuttered would have, and I'm just, you know, I'm not exactly sure of this, but we've talked a little bit about it, would have made him have to like deal with it in some way. But I have very fond memories of that Stud L group. And then that's how I heard about the NSA at the time, because I came in later than you. And I remember my first experience. It was in Long Beach in 2006. And had the same feeling, like walked into the hotel. I'm like, I heard all these voices that were stuttering. And it actually was overwhelming for me. Like, I didn't get that like manna from heaven from the first conference because it was overwhelming and I cried a lot. Mm. But the second conference, I was like, oh gosh, like I'm never going to miss another one, you know, because, you know, but the first one was just like, it was too much after having been covert for 22 years, fooling everybody down to my partner that I'd been with for 20 years. He did not know I stutter.
Oh my goodness.
So to go into that first experience, it was just like my whole mind and body was like just overwhelmed with, oh my God. And then I came back and, you know, I began to be able to talk about it a tiny little bit, but people in my world were just like, no way you don't stutter. I'm like,
really covert.
Very, very covert. And because I felt like I had to protect myself. So, you know, that's where I was coming from with it. But by the time I went to the second conference, as you mentioned, I began to gather up that confidence, mm-hmm. and that courage that I needed. And I found myself very quickly doing my own workshop at the NSA, definitely my life has changed because if I wanted to be covert, I can't anymore, you know, because it's just easier for me to stutter. Have you ever experienced that? Have you ever heard anybody tell you, or have you thought it's just easier to stutter than try not to?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but before finding the NSA, mm-hmm. like I said, my speech was, I was very disfluent. I was full of fear. I was afraid to talk. I didn't talk a lot. I worked for, when I was working in research science, I worked for the same person. I worked for the same woman from 1984 until 1999. I worked for this. We worked together every day. And I mean, she knew I stuttered. We talked for hours a day. Never once did we mention stuttering.
Wow.
We were pregnant at the same time. We shared everything about our lives. We shared everything about our children. She met my son, Kyle, many, many, many times. Mm-hmm. because he didn't stutter. I mean, she didn't know that he stuttered, because when she met him, he didn't stutter. I never told her that he stuttered. So yeah, my life was just so bound in this stuttering. And when I, when I stopped trying to not stutter, my speech became free. Mm-hmm. My soul became free. I became authentic.
Right, right.
Yeah, I began living an authentic life. And now, one of my clients is a 73-year-old man who, for, I guess, since he was in his 40s, so like 30-something years ago, took the Martin Schwartz program.
Okay, I've heard of that.
Which is passive airflow, which is part of what fluency shaping is. And so he's been doing that all of these years. And so, and successfully, okay? Mm-hmm. But the way he explains it, he has to maintain that or he will block. He will stutter. And he just retired. So he's no longer talking to people. So he's no longer like practicing, and all of this anxiety and fear is coming up. Mm-hmm. So he came to me to see if I could help him. Mm-hmm. Now, he's actually someone that I knew from my NSA chapter in
Okay.
Years ago. Mm-hmm. So he says to me, "I like the way you talk." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Okay." And I never suggest to anybody that they change what they're doing. I ask them, what are your goals? How can I help you? Mm-hmm. And he said to me, "I would like to speak without fear." And so I just said, sent him an online copy of a book about Joseph Sheehan, who was a proponent of non-avoidance and a lot of stuttering modification things. He read the book. Pam, this guy took off with it himself, okay?
Wow.
The second session, he comes on Zoom, and this man is doing pullouts by himself. He said, I love talking like this. And I don't have to worry about maintaining this false fluency. I don't have to talk, he said, "I don't have to worry about pretending I'm fluent. I don't have to worry about pretending I don't stutter. The anxiety can leave me. The stress can leave me." Like, and this is the way I felt. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it sounds like he was finally free to be fluid, with himself and with his speech, so that he could release that anxiety. Something just popped up in my mind as you were talking. I had such an exciting time at the ASHA conference in 2018, where I presented with Charlie Adams. I don't know if you know Charlie.
Yes. But
we presented a workshop to a very, very large room on covert stuttering. And one of the things that I asked, and because there was mostly SLPs in the audience, how do you work with a stutterer who does not stutter? Mm-hmm. And I have just found from my own experience that that's probably one of the most challenging things mm-hmm. that people who stutter covertly, you know, I landed in therapy for, it was only a little over a year. And I was just like, I can't do this because I didn't need anybody teaching me how not to stutter. I needed somebody to tell me that it was okay the way I was. And I wasn't getting that in that therapy. So for me, how do you help Pam, who says she's a stutterer, but she doesn't stutter? For me, it was like, I just need to let go and be okay with that. And I resisted fluency shaping, you know, and yeah. it's not for everyone.
Yeah. Now, when you're covert or when you have fear, it is not the thing for you because it just increases your fear.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and I'm not a therapist, but I think avoidance reduction really helps a lot of people who stutter, particularly adults, you know? So, oh my gosh, we're going to be winding down in just a couple minutes. This has been such a great conversation, but as a woman who stutters, because that's the main audience here, yes. as a woman who stutters and is an SLP, how has stuttering shaped Lucy?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question.
Or has it?
I don't think it has. You know, a lot of women who stutter have the fear, will they ever find a partner?
Yep.
Because they stutter. Now, my mother was a covert stutterer. Now, she and my father, you know, absolutely adored her. So it never occurred to me that I wouldn't find a husband who would love me because my father adored my mother. And when my firstborn son began stuttering at 28 months, I was absolutely hysterical. Mm-hmm. I was just beside myself. I was just, you can imagine, I was crying and just, my worst fear in the whole entire world mm-hmm. was happening before my eyes. My baby was stuttering. And I said to my husband, I thought he was perfect. Mm-hmm. And my husband said to me, he still is perfect.
Okay. So that sounds to me like how stuttering shaped you a little bit. Like, you know, you came to this realization or were told by your husband that just because somebody stutters does not mean that they're imperfect. And you mentioned Brené Brown earlier in the conversation. She has a wonderful book called The Gifts of Imperfection. And, you know, when we can reach that point where we can, you know, validate ourselves, you know, warts and all, you know, whether it's stuttering or autism or anxiety, particularly with kids. Yes, they're okay. They're okay the way they are. And, you know, I think that's an important story that you just shared. You taking on all that fear that your kid stuttered, but your husband was like, he's still perfect. He's perfect just the way he is. And, you know, I think that's a powerful message for, you know, all people who stutter to believe and internalize, and particularly for women, because we're the ones that have the babies and we don't want to have that fear that we're passing it on, right? Yeah, interesting. Very, very interesting. One last question.
Yes.
What advice would you offer to a young woman who stutters that is just starting out on her journey with stuttering?
I would tell her that keep in mind that it's okay to stutter. No one told me. I didn't get that message until I was 42 years old. And, you know, kids today hear it, but I didn't hear it. And my mission in life is that every kid who stutters hears it. And we can't assume that they know it. We have to speak it and they have to hear it. And we have to make sure they understand it, that it's okay to stutter and it's okay to speak while you are stuttering.
Yeah.
So I would tell a young woman, you know, it's okay to stutter and don't let it hold you back in whatever you want to do. Be brave. It's okay to be afraid. Feel the fear and do it anyway.
That's such a great book.
Well, a man that I met at that first convention said those words to me. Part of the reason that you were saying that your first conference wasn't that great for you, but the second one was, I had met all these and become friends with all these people on Stud Out already.
Mm.
And when I went, then I met them all and it was like,
right.
I was already friends with them. They were like, we were like all like waiting for each other, like to meet each other. So, you know what I mean? And this guy was Ward Harkady was this man who I was having a lot of fear about graduate school.
Hmm.
He said those words to me, feel the fear and do it anyway. And so I would tell her, you know, everything isn't always going to be comfortable and it's okay to be uncomfortable, challenge yourself, take risks.
And like you said, be brave.
be brave. Don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it. If it's something you want to do, don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it, because you can do. Shoot for the stars. Look at Joe Biden. He became president of the United States and he is talking about that he stutters.
Yep.
He doesn't always show it, but he's talking about it.
Right. So, you know, hopefully we'll be able to, you know, benefit from that big platform that he now has. But what a great way to wind down this conversation, you know, talking about being brave, talking about, you know, recognizing fear and do it anyway. Lucy, thank you so much for sharing so much, so many of your honest thoughts and for being a guest today.
And I would tell that young woman to be honest with people, to disclose the fact that she stutters. That's very important.
Very powerful.
Make it a discussable topic. Talk about it.
Yep. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.